Once upon a time in medieval England, there was a young king who would do just about anything for his favourite knight. They were inseparable. With love at the front of a king's mind, instead of war or ambition, you'd think the kingdom would be in for a golden era of peace. But England is headed for the most catastrophic collapse seen for hundreds of years. The saga continues. Join me, Dan Jones, on This Is History, A Dynasty to Die For, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I am Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are in House of the Dragon Season 2, Episode 4, which right now is being titled A Dance of Dragons. We're not sure if that's the official title, but that's IMDb has. And my, it was A Dance of Dragons, was it not, Matt?
I feel sad, man. I feel... This is one of those things where it's almost like the curse of being someone like, well, in the books, here's, you know, like I knew what was going to happen. And wow, let me tell you, they did change one thing in that is like massive, like huge deal. And we will get to that because that is, I just re-listening to it, you know, this week again, the World of Ice and Fire chapter about the Battle of Rook's Rest. And yeah. Big difference we'll talk about, but still, I mean, hey, Rhaenys went out swinging. All right.
Rest in peace to Rhaenys.
She could have flown off. She could have flown off. Said, hey, here's what happened. You saw
her. It was her mission, though.
She tightened her belt buckle and she said, nope, I'm turning back.
She said, we gotta stop them here. It stops with me. And gave it her all. I mean, you could tell Maelys was battle ready. Dispatched Sunfire fairly easy. And
might have done some critical damage to Vhagar. That is, if that's,
dude, the dragon blood pouring down on the soldiers and it like burning insane. Them on the way down, it was like crazy good. Oh my gosh.
Insane. Wow. Ooh. Yeah, this episode was hyped. This is the one everyone was really talking about. Finally getting some action. We got to see dragon combat. We got to see some other combat. Also, some awesome Daemon is sleeping in a bed made of a weirwood tree. Is that connected to those dreams he's having? You know, you and I did that Patreon episode talking about a lot of that stuff. We're going to have to double back. Okay.
What was in the drink that Alice Rivers gave him?
Yeah. He's tripping, man. He's tripping.
Was it weirwood paste?
Whoa.
Was it Jojen paste?
What? See, that's all spoiler stuff, Jamie. We'll have to save that. But yeah, man. Other than that, there were some. I got a lot of notes, but just initial thoughts, man. I mean, this is the one that everyone said this is like the big episode of the season. I mean, I feel like it was good. I just feel kind of down right now because Rhaenys gone. Pour one out.
Yeah, Rhaenys has been like my dark horse character that I've kind of been attached to, and probably the one that I got the most out of when we rewatched season one and we did the episodes here on the podcast leading into season two. You know, I was talking about how Rhaenys is always in the background and she kind of shadows all of these events and shadows Rhaenyra's character in a lot of ways. And knowing that this was coming, this is one of those times where I'm like, maybe they'll change it. And I kind of wanted them to, even though I know, it's the right thing to do. And also, just like dragons fighting is really sad.
I felt so bad for Maelys, man, her dragon, just because it's the dragon. It's the dragon bond, and it's just like, no, I'm going for it. And then the last thing she sees is the dragon looks at her, says, hey, you know, we're going together. That's a sign of how good it is. It's one of those things where it's like, even if you know what's coming, right, a lot of times like Blood and Cheese, for example, like we knew what was coming, so going into it I didn't get as much of the shock factor because we've read the books and everything. But this, I felt a much more stronger, like, emotional tie to, just because, honestly, this is, and, you know, George Martin actually spoke out a lot in this past, like, week. He missed out on a big interview where he talked a lot about the characters and how they've expanded on everything. And, I mean, yeah, she is one of those characters where, I mean, in the books, again, we keep saying this, but, like, the books, you know, Fire and Blood and World of Ice and Fire, and, you know, the novellas we have and stuff of this context, like Rhaenys, there isn't a ton of context around. It's just like, hey, she was passed over and she joined Rhaenyra and fought with her.
But it was married, so they've to Corlys. Done, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It is married to Corlys. And so they've done a great job of expanding her character. I mean, now her character is obviously gone, but I mean, she had a huge, huge impact on this show. Rhaenyra has now just lost a big piece. And I mean, I think the biggest takeaway for this whole episode has to be Aemon and Aegon and the divide between the two, because, you know, we talked about this in Follow Up Friday. Now, since the show did not have the younger son or the other son, right? The fact that they did not have that other son means that Aemon right now is the heir to the Iron Throne. And in the books, it says that Rhaenys is the one who, like, uses Dracarys, hits Aegon, and burns him. That was a massive sort of change, or, you know, you want to, you know, change it a little bit, right? Or just it happens in the battle, however you want to view it. He does it, and Aegon's like, no. I mean, he clearly uses Dracarys, knowing that Aegon is right there, and then he's walking up, and Kristen Cole says, hey, what are you doing? He might have killed him right there. And then he just walks on.
I think Aemon's a really fascinating character always, but most this episode, because last week we saw him get embarrassed by Aegon, and we talked about how vulnerable he was in that scenario and how bad we felt for him, even though he had done some awful things and really upped the ante in this war at the end of season one. But man, he made no qualms about his plans, or you know, his intentions, I guess. And yeah, that's a big change. You know, all three dragons are supposed to kind of go down at once, from what I remember in the book. And in this scenario, they really broke it up. I thought it made the fight a little bit better, actually. But for all those wondering, I don't know if anyone watched the next episode teaser, so I don't think this is a spoiler.
I haven't watched it yet, but go ahead.
But I believe Aegon to be alive. But okay, you have to wonder if what condition he is in. And for Aemon to just walk away would probably give us the hint that he's really messed up, right? I mean, I know what he is. I know what happens, but, like, trying to keep it spoiler free. But, like, that should give you a hint of just how bad the aftermath of this is going to be. I mean, what about Aegon and his mom, though? And that whole conversation and the Kingsguard members being called imbeciles, and he can't speak Valyrian. Like, you really get the sense of a king who feels useless in this episode and then suits up to go on. I got one complaint about Aegon, though. That crown didn't do it for me, man.
Yeah, Aegon, you know, I saw some photos of it, and, you know, when you do it and you view it in, like, a still frame, if you view it, like, in a very short little vacuum or a still frame, it's clearly a different one than the one they're wearing, and it's obviously meant so that he can turn his head and do stuff. It's more of, like, I would imagine, like, a stunt version. But yeah, the still frames of it make it look like it's, like, cheap plastic, or
crown, like, it should have been a little bit more rubied up.
It's also different. It's clear the one he's wearing there is clearly where they, you know, they're supposed to put it on his helmet, which is, it's clearly a different prop, obviously,
than
as the crown itself.
It could be a little more flashy.
No, you could tell because I also saw the still frame of it, like, some people who had shots of the you know, leaked it or whatever, some of the shots earlier, and yeah, it really does not look good. You know, I mean, but it's so quick that I don't know if you really would notice unless you were specifically looking for it. But if you are specifically looking for it, yeah, it looks bad. Yeah. Like, I will give it that.
So, in the episode, though, you couldn't really tell.
There's a lot in this episode. Just so, where's your initial reviews out of this?
9 out of 10. I really loved it. You know, and I guess if I had to do it out of five, it'd probably be more upwards towards the 5 out of 5. I think it's one of the best episodes of the show thus far. I felt a lot of the tension in the battle, and just also the loss of life and the impact the dragons. Yeah. Like, we've seen a lot of battles in the Game of Thrones universe, but when dragons are involved, the ante's always upped. And this episode, you could feel the impact of the dragons. They were fighting, just the, like, the byproduct of them dancing in the sky, and then they come crashing down, spilling dragon blood, burning people alive. It's just, you really do feel how powerful these things are, even in direct contact. It's just, it was awesome. I thought the levity was there, the weight was there. Big episode for Kristen Cole, looking like a really competent.
He was doing his best Tyrion impression.
I tell you what, yeah,
he really us getting knocked out at the beginning of the battle, man. He's
I thought that whole scene was really good, by the way, when he wakes up and he's kind of like struggling to breathe, and he touches the guy and he, like, you know, basically falls to ash. I was like, oh god, you know. Now, obviously,
Teresa, my wife, who's a nurse, obviously was like, she's like, sounds like he has a collapsed lung. I was like, well,
he
like,
just
there was one shot. Oh, well, real quick, by the way, I think I'm at 4 out of 5. Because I say, like, for me, it's like 5 stars is like the pinnacle, you know. That's like,
yeah.
Tyrion's trial, stuff like that. But it's up there. But on our YouTube poll right now, it is absolutely demolishing. 85% 5 stars.
Yeah, so, I could see people being really big fans of this. I mean, here's the thing.
Especially because last week was sort of a slower episode, right? Like I said, last week, I think would be everybody's least favorite episode of this season so far. Obviously, there was only 3. Now it's 4. I still think, just because it was a little bit slower, there's a ton of great drama in setup. But this episode sort of delivered on a lot of that action that everybody has been waiting for.
Yeah, definitely. And last episode paved the way for this. We had to have the dip in action and pace so that we could do this. I was a little surprised. I actually expected the battle to start earlier in the episode. I don't mind it.
I did too. I was like, oh wow.
It was like 40 minutes. Like, I thought it was gonna be big.
Yeah, the episode actually went a little longer. I mean, I know you look at the time, right? But, you know, so we've had some of these episodes that have been like really, really long. And so I was kind of like looking at my watch and being like, you know, how far into it are we? And then I was kind of like, oh, I think like this is gonna be a little bit shorter. And then actually it went on just a little bit longer than I thought. And we got a few more scenes. Like, there's a couple scenes where I was like, oh, that's where they're going to end it. Like, I actually totally thought they were just going to end it with her crashing and that was going to be it. And then we got the Aemon stuff and Kristen Cole stuff at the end too. So, yeah, I mean, I feel somber of this episode because we lost Rhaenys, man. And she was such a good character. And I think they did so much justice to the source material that, you know, I don't feel like as hyped as I normally would be coming out of an episode, but I think that's a good sign.
That's the intent. I think we're supposed to be mourning.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So let's go a little bit through the episode here. I'll go sort of point by point. Just some of the notes I took. We got to talk a little bit about Daemon. Daemon's dragon dream, right? We got Millie Alcock returning again. He has another one later, right? When he's tripping on the thing and he sees himself as Aemon, right? Did you think for a second that was going to be Viserys? When I saw like the long hair walking, he looked a little more stocky. I was like, we're about to see Paddy Considine, man.
I did.
Like a quick little Viserys.
It obviously was supposed to be Aemon. Like, I thought from behind it was Aemon, but like, it'll turn and maybe it's
just Viserys. Yeah, it was so far. You know, it's just like you just see this figure walking. And clearly it must have been, I don't know who it was. It was probably just a stunt double doing it. Because actually, the person that is doing that is much smaller than Matt Smith, like, you know, or is much bigger, I should say, than Aemon. Right, because Aemon's much smaller of a person. And so, and then it turns and it's Daemon. He sees himself as that. So that was cool. Millie Alcock again, got another little shot of there. And then he wakes up, he's got the blood on his hand, but then they sort of cut away from it. So was there actually blood, or was he just like dreaming it? It was a cool little way to do that.
What came right after that, though? There was blood on his hand, and he turns it, it's gone. And then the servant or whoever, maester, whatever it was, said, there's a raven.
Oh yeah.
There was like some blood, and then there was a rape. I mean, that's strange. Yeah. It's maybe purposefully playing with words. I don't know.
Yeah, go listen to that Patreon episode, and we're gonna have to do another little Patreon thing this week too about that deep spoilers, because now it's even confirming a lot more of that stuff. So, let's continue on a little bit here. You know, I didn't know actually that we were gonna get another Corliss Rainey's thing. I sort of thought they were going to leave it last week when they kind of had a little bit of like a fight, not really, you know, just sort of ended on sort of bad terms. They sort of doubled down on it again and did it again this week. So I, you know, just sawing it, she got to know about the bastards. One thing we talked about is we talked about the possibility of her actually finding out at some point that Laenor lived, right? But doesn't seem so. And by the way, there was a big theory going around last week, and I think we talked about this in Fallout Friday, but I want to talk about it again here on the main show, because I know a lot more people are listening to it. Is last week, right, when Masaria is looking at Sea Smoke flying around, mm-hmm. and says, I think he's lonely. There's nothing confirmed about it, but it sort of seems that it even feels like some interviews and stuff, some questions have been asked, that it might be sort of like quasi confirmed that Laenor just died over in Esso somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that is the dragon like losing his bond, and that's why he's restless. So
really subtle. I like that a lot, actually.
Yeah, it's a super kind of cool way of doing it. It does cancel out some other potential theories, which we talked about in Fallout Friday and as well on that Patreon episode. So just kind of interesting, cool way to do it. And it doesn't mean that they are, though. Could still be alive out there somewhere, we don't know. But that just sort of was some of like the teasing, because she just says he's lonely. It might just be that he's hasn't seen his, you know, friend in a long time. So could be, but so I mean, the potential certainly still exists for him to show back up at some point. Let's see. Allison, let's go here. Allison brewing some moon tea, holding her stomach. That conversation with Laris is huge, because he knows what's going on. And he talks about, like, I have the line here. You know, it's a sin to deny our appetites.
I think it's interesting that we see her taking the moon tea after Rhaenyra supposedly needing moon tea, mm-hmm. with the same person, by the way, Kristen Cole. we see the more hypocritical nature of Allison here. And it just made me think about young Rhaenyra being, you know, given the tea and, you know, take it if you want. And that ended up being such a big deal. And now we have Allison doing the same thing because of the same guy, though Allison thinks that it's because of Daemon with Rhaenyra, which actually wasn't the case. So,
right. You know, I'll just stay on Allison for a little bit here, and then I can kind of go back to some of the other stuff, just because it's like, it was a lot of it's just sort of sprinkled. Her scenes were really just kind of sprinkled through this. I felt like she, let's see, I have it here. I said, Allison sort of questioning if people believe her, right? She asked the maester, like, did Viserys ever speak any of this to you? What do you think? And then she talks a little bit more about Aegon about it, talking about like putting him on the throne. I feel like she is sort of seeking people to accept her truth now that she sort of knows, like, oh yeah, like he didn't mean Aegon, right? He meant like Aegon the Conqueror. And then she was seeking for his books, right? She was looking for his books. So I'm wondering if she's going to go perhaps study and try to find out more about the Song of Ice and Fire and give that to Aegon, or if she was just looking for them to give to Aegon, or, you know, to, so he can get wiser, right? Because he talks about like, you need our counsel, because she's going and looking for them. So yeah. She's clearly looking for them for a reason. We just don't know, you know, why it is that she was doing that. So, and then really, that's kind of all I really have on Allison this episode. I said, I think she's going to study the Song of Ice and Fire. And then, you know, there's just so much more of other characters. So she's a little bit smaller in this episode.
Yeah, but had a really big impact on Aegon in the conversation there, and basically just telling him, hey, you've been put on this throne. We made a lot of sacrifices. Allison obviously feeling this sacrifice more now that she knows that she was incorrect about him, but also just kind of tell him, hey, you're a placeholder. What we need you to do is literally nothing. And what does Aegon do? Which also, Allison, you should know your own son at this point. Come on. You knew he was going to run out there and do something stupid. And now here we are. So Allison's going to be interesting to watch going forward. I have to brush up on everything that happens with her in Fire and Blood, but she's way more featured in the show, I would say, than she necessarily is in Fire. She's there in Fire and Blood, and a very important character. And there's a lot about her, but as this thing goes on, like, what is her role going to be going forward? Is it just going to be her, you know, kind of a moral dilemma with Kristen Cole? How is her brother going to play into this? Is another good question. So I'm very curious to see what the show specifically does with her.
Yeah, I agree. I'm interested to see because her role going forward. Yeah, I mean, they've already added a ton of stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, it's kind of like once they make the decision to put Aegon on the throne in the books, like Alicent kind of falls off the pages a bit.
Yeah, Aegon versus Rhaenyra.
Is where the story goes. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm very interested to see. I mean, that's another thing they've done. Like, you know, they super expanded a lot of characters, like Helaena Targaryen. I mean, she's infinitely bigger.
I missed her this episode, honestly. I was excited to see if we get any more prophecy.
Speaking of that, I have a note about that as well. I was like, the whole set feels different. The whole episode felt totally different once Rhaenyra walked in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
just because Emma Darcy is just so freaking talented that, I mean, like, just commanding presence, like, as soon, right, as Rhaenyra steps onto the scene. I mean, it's just absolutely insane. So, I mean, again, I'm going to be shocked if Emma Darcy doesn't get nominated for some awards, because clearly deserves.
What about Jace, though, too? Jace, I thought that actor, he's done a great job this season, but, like, had a lot of shine in this episode, you know, definitely pushing back against his mother, but going to her afterwards, you know, still puts him in a good light, I think. And Jace has a big role to play going forward. So especially with Rhaenys down, you know, he has just become even more important. Obviously, he's the heir, getting the Song of Ice and Fire prophecy.
That was huge, too. And I love the way they did. I loved that back and forth.
The voiceover.
Where the voiceover, the thing was going. By the way, we did also have another... I missed it last week. I didn't notice it. This week I did, when Daemon is walking and you can hear like the sounds right throughout the hall and everything. Of course, he was in King's Landing, so it's, you know, it's definitely a dream. It was pretty obvious. But yeah, so they did sort of dive back into that again. So let's talk about Aemond in this episode, because I feel like that's sort of the big piece. Obviously, Rhaenys is gone. Pour one out. I thought her ending was a great way to, like, tribute to that character. And, you know, I think a lot of people are going to be like, this is really like the first big death. Obviously, Viserys dies, but, you know, we sort of knew that.
Yeah.
Right. This, for a lot of people who are watching the show, is going to be that first, like, big character, they're gone, you know, that they really feel the weight of that character being gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Viserys is also like one of those things, but that one was very obviously coming. You know, he was getting worse and worse, and we also know that the show has basically been marketed about secession, so like everyone kind of knew he had to go at some point, I think, even non-book readers. But this is the one where, you know, there's been time enough for an emotional attachment to grow for some people. I'm sure there's gonna be some people like, oh, the old dragon lady died, I don't care. Like I said, for me, this one hurts. And then also just dragons fighting. Like I said, it feels like dogs fighting, which I hate. I really, really hate it.
I know. Melee's look back, man, I was like, oh.
And then that fall, I could feel myself falling. You ever get that feeling?
Like, it was so well done. And by the way, the director, I believe, I have to look it up. Is it
Alan?
Alan Taylor? Is that his name?
That might be his name, yeah. Yeah, Alan Taylor. Yeah.
Alan Taylor. Right. And he's directed some of the biggest episodes of Game of Thrones. I mean, he directed Baelor, which is where Ned Stark gets his head cut off. He directed the finale of Game of Thrones, you know, like that. You think about that final scene not the finale of Game of Thrones, season one of Game of Thrones, I should say. Right. Like the very iconic Daenerys scene where the dragons come out. I mean, and you continue on, and he's done some big, big battles and stuff like that, too. He did a lot of season one, season two, and then he came back for like season seven. I think he did the one with Viserion where they go north of the wall.
Yeah.
And yeah, so
he didn't write it.
He did not write it. Correct. He directed it. Yes.
Let's clear that up right now.
Yeah. George didn't write it either. So, you know, like,
that's right.
Again, so this episode did feel bigger, right? Although they were saying that battle was going to, I will push back on the battle a little bit. they were saying that the battle was gonna like as big as like Battle of the Bastards, but it was mostly dragons. So I did not feel like the battle.
It's a different type of battle, because they don't have an army on the ground yet, really, in Westeros for the Blacks. And I think that's why I'm okay with it kind of being put up in the upper echelon, because we've never seen a fight quite like this.
For sure.
You know, it's at this level in the scale with the dragons, there being three of them there, and dragon riders, like proper with their handles, and a bunch of different people saying Dracarys. So, like, I think that I'm okay with it being kind of propped up. And I also will say, I thought that the cinematography was absolutely gorgeous.
It was awesome.
The entire thing was just crazy.
Real quick, how does Vhagar, this big old freaking like lumpy dragon, get the jump on not one but two Vhagar out of nowhere? How does this old, you know?
Hi, I'm Dan Jones, and This Is History, A Dynasty to Die For is back for a brand new season. This time we meet Edward II, a larger than life character who starts out as the party boy prince and ends up, well, I don't want to give too much away. He's got one thing on his mind, not war, not ambition, but love. And it's a love that will get him in burning hot trouble with his barons, his family, and his queen. The king's affection for his favorite knight kicks off a wild rollercoaster reign full of love and hate, war and grief, famine, and just about all the horsemen of the apocalypse. Along the way, we'll meet tiger mums, Scottish legends, murderous cousins, a herd of camels, and one extremely hot iron poker. Listen to and follow This Is History, A Dynasty to Die For, available wherever you get your podcasts.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water. Enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Pull it off.
That it got me. Like, it actually got me. Like, I jumped.
Well, I was, because I'm like sitting there waiting. I'm like, I know she's gonna go down, but oh, then he was flying back up,
up over the like crest there, and that genuinely like got me to jump scare. So that's the second time.
I did get sort of Jurassic Park vibes when they're doing the, and they're showing him in the woods, and you can like see it. It was almost like, you know, like in Jurassic Park when the T-Rex comes out and like the water. Yep. Like, that's sort of the same feeling I had.
Yeah, that epicness is definitely there. Like, and the fact that it's like this monumental thing that the dragons are there. Like, whenever the Lord of Rookrest was like looking, and like, come on, my lord. And no, he's like, nah, I'm gonna see this dragon fly over this tree line. Like, I gotta see this. This is insane. Oh man.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So but then we have that conversation with Aemond and Aegon, which is in Valyrian, and then we get it where Aegon isn't as good in Valyrian, right? So that was like a pretty cool scene, also because it just felt more powerful. It felt like a big deal right? Just because mm-hmm. all the other council members, maybe other than the Maester, I don't know, you know, clearly do not understand Valyrian. So they just have to sit there while they have this conversation. And then, right, the decision to burn Aegon. I mean, what do you think about that? Was he doing that like being like, I don't care that Aegon's there? Was he doing it because
I think he knows he's the heir? I think he knows he's the heir. And 100%. I also think we cannot disregard vengeance. He was embarrassed by his brother last episode to the point where we feel bad for him. Like, yeah. You know, and I don't necessarily cheer for Aemon, but I was pissed. And I think that Aemon wants to have a strong hand. It was 100% on purpose. 100%. Yeah. I like the decision, actually. I like it more.
Yeah, I guess this is another one of those things that's different that they do in the books and the show. And what it does is it's another thing that they've done in the difference between the books and the show that impacts the greens more than it does the blacks, right? Mm-hmm. Because like blood and cheese, you take Helaena not having to make that decision out of the equation, and then you know you put that focus more on Kristen Cole and Alicent, which gives you more story angles with the greens to go through.
Yeah,
here, you know, in the books it's Rhaenys that does it, so it even feels even more like she went down swinging, right? Because mm-hmm. she injures Vhagar. I mean, she sort of, you know, does some damage to Vhagar, and she also you know, in the books is the one who like weakens Aegon and burns him. And so it feels like, oh, like she went out valiantly, went out swinging. I guess it's another thing where we sort of have more information, right, on the blacks mm-hmm. in the books. Like it's much more Rhaenyra and Daemon focused, where they need more story angles to go through with the greens. So yeah, I mean, it's another one of those things. I don't know how I feel about it. Only because I don't have a preference,
but I like it. I like the change. Like this works for me.
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I just feel more like I want to see how they play out. Like how valiantly Rhaenys went down. Like if they end up making it feel like it was a big deal, then I'll feel better for it. Because in the books, it feels like she goes down swinging. I mean, she huge blow. It was like it was worth it almost.
Yeah, there's like a whole paragraph with all of her titles, like the queen mm-hmm. that never was, the daughter of Jocelyn Baratheon, and mm-hmm. I can't remember her dad's name. It doesn't matter. Anyways, you know, they gave her a whole paragraph sending her off. And you actually, it's one of those moments in Fire and Blood, even though it's his history and it kind of goes, you know, in big footnotes, it takes time to hit the levity of that. And I think the show did a fantastic job in her last moments. And especially,
it was great.
The facial acting was impressive because you could tell when she turned Maelys around the second time that it was like, all right, old girl, like, this is it.
This is it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great. It was powerful. I'm blown away by how good it was. Cause I was like, woof, I
teared me up. Yeah. It got me a little bit emotional. I gotta say though, on a lighter note, we had a huge appearance in this episode and I can't believe we didn't start off the episode with it.
What's that?
Oscar Tully.
They're going with it.
Let's go.
There you go. The musket is
Grover Kermit. Oscar is Grover Oscar. Show up.
I think so.
I hope so.
I think so, man. I think they're just going to do it.
I hope so, dude. I absolutely love that. And then that whole thing with Daemon being like, what do you need? And he's like you summon. Oh, that's actually after that. That's with the Blackwoods.
Right.
And he's like, oh, well, what do you want? And he's like, you summon me, Lord. And then Daemon seeing his dead ex-wife.
Yep, that added to it with Tripp, another cool little cameo. Yeah, Daemon.
Something is going on with Daemon. Like whether or not me and Matt on the Patreon episode, where we dive into all spoilers, we did like talk about what our theory is for this because we've actually talked about it before.
I'm tripling down even more on it now.
And also,
Alice Rivers, I think she is might be way more than we think she is. I mean, like way more. There are people out there theorizing right now that she may end up being Melisandre.
Okay, that's a lot. That's a lot. I don't know about that one. I don't know if I love that.
Is it?
I mean, I can't say it's not. But there's no reward there. There's no, like, we haven't got any reward. That is true. That is true.
Is she the ghost of High Heart? Is she Jenny of Oldstone?
Now that is it. But wait, isn't that all based around when Rhaegar goes, though? Right? Am I wrong?
Well, Jenny of Oldstone's shows up when is king and like Summerhall and stuff.
Yes, that's way later, right?
Maybe, but a lot of people think Jenny of Oldstone's is Melisandre. A lot of
what?
Oh yeah, dude.
That's really?
Yes.
Oh well, I haven't heard this one. I've been in this. Oh,
that's a super popular one. The Jenny of Oldstone's is Melisandre. That's a big, a lot of people think that.
What?
Because that might be why Summerhall burned, is because it was more than just a let's wake dragons. It was like also like, oh, let's wake dragons because of her lore. That's because it's just mysterious characters. A lot of people think that Melisandre could be any mysterious Shira Seastar as well as Quaithe. Yeah. Like a lot of the who is Quaithe theories are also all work for like who is Melisandre theories.
Right, because she's so old. And Gurm has said that she's the most misunderstood character, which some people take as like a tongue-in-cheek type of thing where it's like misunderstood because you don't realize who she is rather than like her motivation.
Remember in the show, she takes off the glamour and she's super old. In the book, she's never done that. So she could be hundreds of years old. We don't know. It seems like she's probably about the same age as like Maester Aemon, which would put her older than like Egg and Duncan the Tall, right? Since he goes to the wall. So that could put her in that like Jenny of Oldstone's.
That is interesting. I will say I will have to do more independent research into this. I will do my own research into this and see what I think. But regardless of all of this, like whether or not our theory from Patreon's right or the iceberg that we did a year and a half ago where we called all this, like regardless. Yeah. Like regardless,
and people said we were crazy.
I know, and now look where we are.
Now I'm even more on it now.
But the thing that I'm saying here is obviously something more is going on with Daemon.
Way more.
The story that we have in Fire and Blood of Daemon is not all there is. They're going we're going somewhere weird.
Yeah, and Alice Rivers, way. By the way, I think they may do something totally. I think her story in the book may be like. They might just pitch it. It might be totally different, but they are clearly setting her something up for something way bigger than she is in the books. And remember, by the way, I just want to dive into this Melisandre thing a little bit more. The actress that plays her, I always forget her name. It's like Van, her last name. Anyway, she said that she would like to come back and said that I think she specifically said in House of the Dragon.
Yeah, because she did.
That Melisandre is old and we don't know, and it's glamoring and all the stuff. I mean,
also, who would want that paycheck, to be fair?
Well, for sure. Yeah. But by the way, bringing back up the Song of Ice and Fire again, they're expanding the mysticism. They're expanding the lore a bit more in this show to connect it to Game of Thrones to go forward. What they really might be doing, by the way, is that I think they're going to be building up this stuff here, which does sort of ultimately tease like Jon Snow, but it lays the groundwork for the Duncan Egg show when you want to get to Summerhall.
Yeah, Summerhall.
What was the deal there? Which also lays the groundwork for Game of Thrones, and potentially, we're talking years down the line, the Jon Snow sequel.
Or Robert's Rebellion, with Rhaegar being a prominent character talking about the reason why he had to pick up the sword and shield, right? Like that's always been
the they could still do the Jon Snow show and dive deeper into, you know, dive deeper into him actually being like the Princess Promised.
But as far as we know right now, it's shelved. Before we get a bunch of comments telling us that we didn't know this.
Well, you do know it's shelved.
Yeah,
right?
It's shelved for now.
Shelved, which does not mean canceled, is the way George likes to put it.
Yes.
By the way, Kit Harington is in some other HBO show. I keep seeing ads for it. I don't know if it's good or not.
Good for him. I'm glad
that he's working. Yeah, I was gonna, like, he was supposed to be in Blade, but Blade's been canceled like 60. They literally cannot find a writer for it. They've had like six different directors.
Yeah, maybe leave that one dead.
I don't know, man.
Maybe leave it dead. Might be a good idea.
Yeah. So let's take a look here. Yeah. Any other thoughts you want to get Jimmy here? Well, before I start kind of
Online. No, I like the pace of this episode. I thought it was good. The only part that I thought was a little bit weird, and I'm kind of curious what other people think. So I think the Alice River casting visually is phenomenal. It's actually insane how much she looks like the portrait from the wiki.
And a lot of other just fan art of that character.
But I don't know how much I enjoyed her actual delivery. Like her dialogue felt, I don't know. I had like a hard time kind of hearing it, I guess. Like it almost sounded like the mixing was off or something like that for me.
I guess I didn't notice that.
I'll have to rewatch it. I've noticed, because I rewatch the episode every week, I've noticed that sometimes it sounds better later in the week. I don't know if that's just me.
I think they do go in and edit it and stuff like that. Disney is very notorious for doing that. Mm-hmm. There have been a couple like production things we've noticed this season too. I mean, like specifically the one that I remember is the conversation at the wall between Craig and Stark and Jace. It just feels like
the mixing's weird.
The mixing is weird. Like you can tell it because there's no like other audio. There's no like wind blowing and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like all the stuff in Game of Thrones feels like the microphone was there.
Yes. Right.
This feels like they like it's like in a sound booth. And it's kind of weird.
Yeah, the Alice Rivers thing, it almost felt like she had an accent and didn't have an accent. It might have just been me, though, to be honest.
I guess I didn't notice it, so I oh, now I have to go back and watch it. But yeah, that's why we do this. Okay, wow, Jimmy. Okay, this is, let me get our fan reaction here on our thing on our YouTube page. This is our review of it, right, of our watchers and listeners. 84% 5-star, by far the highest of this season. We do have some comments here as well. I'm gonna miss the princess. It was straight fire. The dragon battle killed me. That's where I'm at. I hate seeing dragons die.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
Oh man, I am opening up the dreaded Twitter, and it seems like there are lot of positive things going around. But our good friend MJ over at the Gray Area has the still of Rhaenys touching Alyn's face and says he should have been raised up and honored, not hidden beneath the tides. And Catelyn Stark could never; he'd be at the wall in a fortnight.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to pull up. This is Westerosi's, right? Who we often share as well. Which is sort of like, I would say it's usually like one of the better things. So just sort of like, what are your thoughts of episode 4? Now, again, a lot of people that follow this are obviously like book readers, show people. Amazing. RP the queen who never was, most loyal till the end. One of the literal best episodes of television ever. Easily rivals peak Game of Thrones and may be better. Incredible television. 1,000 storylines in this episode. Incredible. Just insane. I need more. There's the Homelander. Perfect. So, I mean, I think a lot of people are just like, wow, they loving it. Best episode so far.
Excellent. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I feel like that's actually a pretty good point of what that person said, though, is like how many storylines, like we think about the main storyline being like, you know, the secession or taking of the throne or whatever. But like there's a lot of personal things going on in this show, like the little extra bits around Rhaenys and Corlys. Like how is Corlys going to react to all this? Like we know in the book what he supposedly does, but like thinking about that and the impact it's going to have on his character going forward is really interesting. There's a lot of moving parts in the show.
I can't even find somebody who's negative about it. Oh, I mean, like, I'm sure. Yeah. It was stupid to go back as a character. She just makes decisions in high pressure situations.
Her job was to hold Rook's rest, and she did it to the end. So
yeah,
I don't think there's any problem with that. Also, Matt, you know what we also forgot to mention? The fact that the Blackwell boy from season 1 that was he's back and he looks grown. Yeah. No, wait, there's no way that would be, it would be him, wouldn't it? Because it's years later.
Yeah, remember because he's much younger.
Kid. Yeah, Samwell. Yeah. It was like Sam or Samwell.
Sam Blackwell, yeah.
Oh, dude, I was sitting there. I'm like, I think that's him. And obviously that's one of my favorite moments from season 1 where they really dig into Blackwood's versus Brackens.
Let's see here. Okay, all right. I found a couple of negatives. One, the battle was over too quickly and lacked epic appeal. I would have liked to have seen Aemond in trouble.
I think we're supposed to feel the one surprise.
The fact that there's two dragons against one,
and Meleys was already injured. So that's right. A big thing. But also, like, Vhagar's just massive.
Way bigger, way more powerful. Yeah,
yeah.
And like Vhagar could probably take out all three of Daenerys's dragons at once.
Yeah. Yeah, with the size difference, I think that that's
probably. Because remember, like, Daenerys's dragons, people kind of forget this, are like some of the smallest. Yeah. I mean, I like Luke's dragon was really small, right? I mean, like, but even when they're full grown, like Daemon's and, you know, a lot of these other dragons dwarf them, right? At least that's like the official HBO chart and everything they've released and stuff like that. Is like Daenerys's dragons are like some of the smallest. I'll see if I can find that, by the way. Some other things here. Hate that Team Black has them outnumbered 13-3 with dragons, and they only choose to send one into battle there. I know a lot of them are younger, wild, but damn, that's the only advantage they have right now. Well, you know, you got to remember that a lot of these dragons are unclaimed. They don't have dragon riders yet.
Supposed to kind of be a first time sending out the dragons. And the whole idea is that it's so close to Dragonstone that if they send a dragon, there's no way they'll have time from King's Landing to react.
Yeah, they were not expecting at all. Like, even Criston Cole obviously was not expecting that Aegon was going to be there. Vhagar was the surprise. Mm-hmm. So now Criston Cole again, by the way, it's like him and Aemond did this whole deal. Like, he's not looking so good as Hand of the King.
No. But, if Aemond's going to have,
so who do you think? So bigger, I mean, bigger blow here, which in the power scale, which team do you think is, took a bigger hit?
The Blacks are down. I mean, Rhaenys is way too important. Meleys is the second biggest dragon behind Vhagar. So the Blacks just lost one of their most experienced, if not the most experienced dragon rider, and their biggest dragon. And honestly, I hate to say this.
And
Aegon? They wanted him to do nothing, you know?
But the king was just injured gravely in battle.
Yes, from that perspective, not great. But losing Aegon, him being down, I should say, like, but he's also like not.
I don't know, Jimmy.
You know, I don't know. I think losing Rhaenys is way bigger, dude. Especially they lost Rook's Rest, like they lost it.
Yeah,
but so Rook's Rest
isn't super important.
It's so important.
Emotionally, I feel like the blowback. So. Two things. Emotionally, I feel like the blowback on the Blacks is way bigger because you just lost Rhaenys, who Rhaenyra views as like a strong, confident. It's also your like major battle commander's wife, right? In like Corlys Velaryon, there's going to be a lot of emotion, have to deal with that there. Now, the two times you've sent dragons out, you've lost them. You come back and you're saying, all right, I'm ready to go to war. And your first thing immediately is a loss. Strategically, I think the Greens lost big time today.
Yeah, I think rest is too important. I think it cutting off the land and then also just taking out, I mean, the biggest dragon that the Blacks have, I think it matters a ton. And not to mention that the descent that's already in the
council. Is her dragon bigger than Daemon's?
Yes, Meleys is the second biggest in this series. Currently, I shouldn't say in House of the Dragon. Yeah, but you know, the other thing is like the descent in the Black Council. It's only going to be worse. It's only going to get worse from now.
I think strategically, Sunfire got majorly effed up. So that's kind of like losing a dragon. I mean, he's not entirely lost, but. It's a big deal. The king is severely injured. There's dissent among the ranks. Now the king is like, doesn't even trust his own brother. Allison's not going to trust Criston Cole. And let's not forget this for a second. Vhagar got hurt.
He did.
Vhagar is no longer indestructible.
That is true. Not no longer indestructible, but still
if
alive.
If it bleeds, I can kill it. Right. You know, I mean, I mean, that's like, that's the deal. So, I mean, you gotta keep that in your mind as well. So, wow. Yeah, man. I mean, I'm just continuing to look on Twitter here and we'll close up shop here shortly, but yeah, everyone's saying I'm like 100 out of 100 as promised, Fire and Blood. You know, my favorite episode so far of this season, RIP to the Queen who never was, saddest part thus far. I mean, it feels like, this is what everyone was waiting for.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, real quick before we close up shop, this is something I was kind of curious about. Aemon picks up the dagger, by the way.
Yes.
Do you think he could read it? Because it's been put to fire.
Oh,
you know, remember? And there's Valyrian on it. And obviously they made a point to show us that Aemon can speak and read Valyrian.
Maybe.
And then he picks up the blade. I just thought of that because they made a point for him to pick up that dagger.
Yes.
But do you think maybe Aemon will end up thinking he is the prince that is promised?
That could be a huge deal.
Oh my. Oh my. That is big. That's cool. It would be showing the Valyrian because right, he puts in the fire and that's when it shows. So there's fire all around. I mean, I have to assume. Right. Okay, maybe.
Yeah. Well, guys, be sure to send us your emails, thoughts, and theories to btkcast@gmail.com, bendtheneepodcast.com. Leave them on the YouTube. I'll be, you know, posting. A lot of people actually have been watching this on YouTube, as well as listening to it just on the podcast itself. But yeah, so be sure to leave us those comments. We can get those all up for Fallout Friday. Jim and I normally record that on Wednesday, sometimes Wednesday or Thursday. Yeah. We certainly don't record it on Friday. I try to have it up like Friday morning. So
yeah,
so get them in before your best bet, honestly, is like Wednesday morning. And yeah, we're gonna have to probably dive into another Patreon spoiler thing. And by the way, we had a ton of people sign up for that, by the way. So thank you very much to all of you people. I hope you enjoyed that episode. But yeah, we're gonna have to keep the spoiler talk going because there's a ton of like stuff that's not even it's not even necessarily that it's spoilery. It's that it's all stuff that impacts stuff like so far down the line. But to talk about it, we would have to talk about House of the Dragon spoilers. So
yeah, we're spoiling like, season 3 and 4 for sure.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, like we have to spoil like one or two like pretty big events, but it's all about stuff that would in theory take place like all after this. So
yeah,
but it's like insane level stuff that we didn't, you know, never even thought would exist. So anywho, with that, guys, we will be back next week, right, with House of the Dragon season 2, episode 5, man.
Over
midway point.
Over Woo. Halfway through. I'm sad and happy all at once.
Yeah. So if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, write us for you, leave a comment, send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com. We'll see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 2 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.